yeah. Welcome to the motherfucking Soulcast. Today's guest is my homie Kaylin from Wheelchair Sports Camp. Kaylin is an activist, artist, teacher, educator, all around badass, awesome person. This interview is basically, we're going to be talking about like music and her politics and her activism and how kind of music has been this sort of segue, which has led to this transformation. It's really, really an interesting and educational interview. I think people are going to get a lot out of this. Her personal journey is super, super inspiring. She has a condition called osteogenesis imperfecta, which basically means that she has fragile bones. And we're going to talk about that in the interview and basically, you know, how through her music and through engaging in all these other social struggles, she started to really reflect on her condition and her people and got involved with ADAPT and did some really badass direct actions, and through music has just been communicating and building community all over the country and all over the world. You know, she works at Youth on Record, which is the sort of educational project teaching kids how to do hip hop and music production stuff that started by the Flowbots. And, you know, we're just going to talk about Denver, and it's a great interview. Kaylin is super unpretentious, and yeah, check this interview out. Check out her new album, which is out on Sage Francis's label, Strange Famous Records. The album is called No Big Deal. Pick it up. Check it out. When these motherfuckers are coming to your town, spread the word. Throw up your fists. And if you enjoyed this interview, give us a shout on social media. And yeah, so check it out. And before we begin, let's hear from one of our network affiliates on the Channel Zero Podcast Network.
In this story, when you hear this, turn the page. Let's begin now.
Too busy trying to survive capitalism's daily grind to get caught up on the latest anarchist news? Or maybe you're so wrapped up in your own organizing that it's hard to make time to hear about other liberatory struggles. This Rebel Girl has got you covered. Tune in every Wednesday for new episodes of The Hotwire, a 30-minute podcast with the latest anarchist news, on-the-ground interviews, a repression roundup, political prisoner birthdays, and announcements for upcoming events. All this and more at crimethink.com.
Oh yeah, Kaylin from Wheelchair Sports Camp. Welcome to the Soulcast.
Yeah. Thank you. Welcome to my apartment.
Thank you for inviting me up here. I've been walking past these apartments for a while now and saw them spring up, so it's cool to be here. I've been here before, though.
Cool.
So what's going on? How you living?
I'm living. Trying to make it to the solstice, you know? It's December. Everything's weird. It's a weird time of year for everybody, I think.
So. Yeah. Well, especially, you know, this 70 degree weather.
Yeah, I think that's only making everything worse and weirder.
You've lived in Denver your whole life, right?
For the most part, I lived outside of L.A. as a kid, but I was back. I was born here, and then I came back when I was 8, so.
So you've seen the weather. Do you feel like, you know, there's always crazy, there's always beautiful weather in Colorado and crazy fluctuations. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like it's extremely warm?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's been a gradual thing. Not to say that we wouldn't have, like, a random 70-degree day in the winter, you know. That's the best part about Colorado is It's always sun. The snow never stays. It always melts because the sun. We get more sun here than anywhere. But not this consistent. I mean, this is crazy.
I know.
And I feel so guilty for, like, enjoying the... Because, you know, the winter... I hate the winters. Like, I hate snow. Snow hates me. Snow hates wheelchairs. So...
I don't know if snow sticks to wheelchairs. Maybe it loves the wheelchairs. Yeah, it's my homie, like, you know, because I live around the corner from you, just full disclosure, mm-hmm. you know, we're in the same neighborhood, mm-hmm. La Alma. I can say that now because I don't care. Mm-hmm. I don't care if people know where I live. And this is not Linkin Park. This is motherfucking La Alma. Yeah,
this is the West Side. I'm in the West Side Project.
Yeah.
The new and improved West Side Project.
Right, well, before it was Real Projects.
They still are. They're still Denver Housing Authority.
But it's, like, mixed income now.
Right.
Yeah, I remember one time I lost my dog, and I was, like, running through here, like, looking for him, and I was like, have you seen my dog? And I'm like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Well, so let's just introduce you to people who don't know, who've never heard your music before. You're Kaylin, you're the rapper behind Wheelchair Sports Camp.
Yeah. That's my crew.
How long you been doing this shit? How long you been performing?
Forever, you know. Like, I think I started, like, doing it as a talent show at sixth grade, you know. I wrote a rap about the Broncos winning the Super Bowl.
Nice.
And, so, yeah, I guess all my raps were, like, for performance, I guess. I wrote raps to perform. I never really, like, had hella notebooks. You know, it was, like, signing myself up for something in order to force me to, like, do something. So I've been doing it forever. I started Wheelchair Sports Camp early in college, like 2008, 2009. It's me and a kid that I grew up with. I was making the beats and just got a scholarship to go to school here in Denver for engineering and production. So I was really just, like, trying to teach myself how to use the equipment better and use the equipment at all because I couldn't afford any of it. And then it kind of, like, slowly evolved into this band, and it still, like, evolves, and, yeah, that's Wheelchair Sports Camp. We've been doing it for a while, but I say, like, the current sound we got right now really didn't get locked in until a few years ago, touring more together, and, kind of, like, really pushing ourselves and experimenting with sounds, getting more noisy.
Nice. Yeah, well, you got Greg in your band now. So
yeah.
He's fucking awesome. I love that guy. Yeah. And so you were born with a thing called osteogenesis imperfectus. Did I say this right?
Close. Imperfecta.
So what is that?
It's brittle bones. It's a genetic disease. Neither of my parents have it, but it was like a fluke. So one of them could be a carrier, or it might have just been hella random, I'm not sure. But, because I'm an only child, they had me and were like, fuck this. Not gonna risk that again. So yeah, it's genetic, and I've had it since ever. And I've had over 100 fractures.
Jesus.
Hella surgeries. And there's different types, you know. Some people don't break much and are, like, average height. Some people are much smaller than me, much more severe. So I fall pretty close to the middle, maybe a little better. Like, I don't have breathing problems or, yeah, most of my breaks are pretty self-inflicted, like being an idiot and living crazy.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I had no idea that that's what your condition was. And especially because I know you from, like, Occupy and from, like, being at Fuck the Police marches and just being in the streets, and to hear that you've had, like, 100 fractures in your life and you're still putting yourself at risk like that, that's fucking insane. Yeah. That's amazing.
Cool. Thanks.
I mean, what goes on in your head? Are you like, fuck it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm at a... I don't know. I feel like I'm at a more risk to break different things, like being an idiot or like being drunk or, you know what I mean? Like that. I'm also very like aware of my surroundings because of my disability and because of me being like at such a low level, you know, people like fall on me or like I have to be kind of like hyper aware of everything. So at Actions, you know, like, you know how it goes, like, it's pretty hard to really go down unless you're, like, ready to go down. You know, there's usually, like, an escape route, and I'm, like, usually pretty good at, like, keeping on the front lines and in the middle, and if shit goes down and I'm at risk and don't feel like I serve a purpose, then I usually can find a way out. So, yeah, I've never been arrested until recently for any action, you know, and I've been to a lot, like, you know, I was at Standing Rock the weekend after. It was, like, super brutal, so I'm not scared of those situations. I'm not scared of crowds either. I know some people with my disability, it's hard, but I was always, like, raised in pretty chaotic places. My parents were good at, like, pushing me to do things that weren't always the safest for me, but so I'm kind of ingrained with that crazy fuckery.
I mean, that's great, but that said, it's like, we're not in control of those situations.
Right.
And when they start pepper spraying or doing whatever, I mean, I'm just surprised no one's ever, like, tripped and fallen on you or, you know, you've been knocked over or anything. That's just, that's surprising to me.
Yeah. I was around when we got pepper sprayed. I didn't get it, like, direct, but I was close enough to feel the effects, you know. And I've definitely been in situations where it's like, okay, time to bounce, you know, or, like, at least just move to the side a little bit because it does get rowdy. But I also, like, get off on, like, that chaos a little bit, so I like being up front for all of it, but I'm also, like, again, hyper aware of every exit route, you know. Like, I remember going to Rage Against the Machine, like, so long ago, and it was, like, almost a riot behind me, and, like, could have been a stampede of people that just would have, like, crushed me and my crew. And I'm, like, looking at all the, like, ramps and exit spots, and everything's just covered, and it was just kind of one of those, like, okay, if I go down, it's gonna be at this rage show, because all the people behind this barricade wanted to get to the pit, you know, and I was, like, directly in front of the barricade, directly in front of 30,000 people, just, like, fuck you, I won't do what you tell me, and I'm, like, okay, so...
That's awesome. And that reminds me of, like, you know, there have been times where I've, like, played shows in, like, Serbia or Israel or whatever, and I was just, like, realizing, like, okay, anything could happen right now, you know, or, and sometimes you just gotta, you know, you just gotta say, fuck it, you know?
Yeah, and also, that happened to us in Juarez, like, recently. That was, like, a riot inside. And I was, like...
Juarez, Mexico.
Yeah, Juarez, Mexico.
That was my segue. Anyway, that was my segue. Like, can you talk about your last trip to Mexico?
Yeah.
Starting with Juarez.
Yeah.
Sounds crazy.
Which it ended in Juarez. But, you know, like, I guess, though, to, like, have a lot of these experiences that I've had and to live the life I live, like, I have to kind of let go of, like, my life for a minute. Like, I trust Greg and Wesley and people to, like, carry me up and down flights and flights of stairs, like, drunk and, like, high, and we're going up and down cliffs, and it's like, at that point, you know, again, anything could happen, and like, I'm already susceptible to like breaking, so. But it's like, am I not going to go see these places, or am I going to, like, I just have a little bit higher threshold for that. But yeah, we played Juarez at the end of this Mexico tour that we just wrapped up a month or two ago, 2 months ago now, probably. And it was nuts. Like, it was just a riot. And there were, like, a lot of women that I was worried about, you know, like, I know what it's like, or I read what it's like for women in Juarez and the femicide and shit. So, like, that was my big concern, was, like, the women. I'd be like, mujeres en enfrente, I'm like, cálmate, cuidado, you know, like, calm down, everybody, like, let's have fun, but, like, let's not hurt anybody. And like, it was one of those things where we were having the time of our life, and there were like three dudes like locking arms, creating their own barricade to keep the whole crowd from toppling into us.
Jesus.
And it's like every time Greg goes into like double time or like a crazy drum fill, it was just like chaos, you know. And like, but we kind of live for that shit, you know? Greg's like, yeah! And I'm like, what? So, yeah, like, anything could have happened, and it was the best show we've ever... or the craziest show. Most energetic show we've ever played, and nothing bad happened. There was hella broken glass all over the floor when we left. And then they threw a after party for us till, like, 7 in the morning. It was dope. Mexico's been really good to us, like, and I don't know how that, well, we just got lucky, and we've been to Tijuana now 3 times within a year, and that's kind of been our segue. There's some other, like, punk bands here that play Tijuana, and so I got connected to the right venue, and we played, like, the most perfect show under this super moon. And, like, with this dope-ass band, they double-booked us. And we were going on after this already stacked bill. And I'm like, ah, everybody's gonna leave, you know? And everybody stayed, and that was, like, so much love and, like, support and energy. And so we went back again, and then they asked us to come back again for a festival. And that's when I was able to book a bigger tour. My plan was just to book Border Towns, which seemed a little bit, like, in my reach. And then the band that we played with that first time in Tijuana, I was asking them for some contacts on the border, and they're like, why don't you just fly to Mexico City and we'll book you a bunch of shows out here? And I was like, okay. So we made this like week and a half trip through Mexico, you know, there and back. Another week there and back. And it's great. It's hard to be back. We got spoiled. They treated us like royalty out there a little bit. We played the biggest show we've ever played in Tijuana, like, huge festival, Coachella-sized stage, like, just insane, you know? And then we played that Juarez show, and we hung out with our buds in Mexico City, and, like, are well-connected to this cool, like, indie rock scene, and did some, like, radio interviews and some cool photos, and it was awesome. Some cool, like, live sessions, videos.
Do you speak Spanish?
Poquito.
Oui, oui.
I mean, like, growing up in Denver is pretty, like, I've always been raised around a lot of Mexicans, and I have Mexican family. So it's definitely a familiar language to me, and then I took it in high school and was actually pretty good for a second, but I understand it better than I speak it, and I'm usually around people that speak it so well that I don't have to, so when I do, I'm, like, self-conscious and, like, you know, don't do it as much, so. But I do understand it a little better. I guess all of us do. We all have our different, like, we toured with our bud Tyler, who's fluent, and Greg understands a pretty good amount of Spanish. I understand it. Josh Trinidad speaks it fairly fluently, so.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Y'all, I lived in Barcelona for almost 2 years, and all I did was smoke hash and read, and I didn't fucking, all I learned how to do was order food vegan, and that's about it.
Yeah.
What, you know, just like, I've never really spent a lot of time, I've been to like border towns, mm-hmm. Like, you know, culturally, you know, what are some of like the big things that like us outside of music stuff that like stuck out to you after traveling to Mexico? Like what were you thinking about afterwards? About the difference in experience in life? And
yeah, I guess nothing was like super surprising because I am like around like Mexican culture, and so like I kind of know how great, like, you know, like they're very like, it's a very loving open arms culture, you know. It's like everybody that we hung out with, and I'm like, I like your shirt, they take the shirt off, or like, I like your necklace. I had to stop like complimenting people on their things because they were just like giving them to me, and I'm like, no, I just like it, and they're like, have it, it's yours, you know. Like, came back with so much stuff, and yeah, there's still a grind out there, obviously, but it's definitely a lot more like humble and down to earth, and like the community depends on each other still a lot more than here. Everything's so like outsourced, and you know, like Amazon, you know, and like there, it's like you have to interact with each other and go to markets, and you know, on a music tip, like definitely more appreciative of our travel there. And so weird, like people come into the show and like waiting for us, you know. How, I didn't even know this town existed, you know. It's like so cool. So yeah, just like a lot of like lovingness and like open arms, and like we got taken care of. We slept like in our friend's place in Mexico City on a bed for 6 days, you know. Like, that doesn't happen out here. Can't do that. And they took care of like so much for us, like transportation, and like had like an assistant go with us, and like they know what they're doing, you know. Like, had booked us like radio interviews, and like just went above and beyond to accommodate us and to have us. It was also really weird being disabled out there. I didn't see anybody in a wheelchair.
You didn't see anyone in a wheelchair?
Maybe towards the end, like in the more touristy spots, but not like out at night or out in the street. So that was pretty interesting, and everywhere we played was super inaccessible. But, you know, I'm used to playing inaccessible places here. I've been trying to like be a little bit more careful about it. But there, it's like we wouldn't be able to book any shows if we did it at only accessible spots. That was kind of cool too. Like that was like a heavy realization towards the middle of Mexico City. Like, holy shit. You know, like, I wonder how many, like, queer women in wheelchairs have ever toured Mexico. I don't know how anybody would do it if they were not as tiny as me. You know? Like,
crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's a crazy thought, because probably not many. You know?
And it was like so weird, like how I felt like they like understood what we were doing, like what we're doing musically better than here, like even the other places out of the country. You know, we've been to Canada and Europe a little bit, but like for some reason they just like get it, and they're like, how? Like, because there's like this language barrier, and I'm not so like worried about like my lyrics and content, but like it's a magic place. It's a very magic place and like a very spiritual place.
Makes me want to go. You want to go? I think. I mean, do you still have like live horns? And, mm-hmm. I'll bet like all the live element. And I mean, yeah, people just get shit sometimes. It's like mm-hmm. that's what music's supposed to do. It's supposed mm-hmm. to transcend.
Yeah.
These artificial borders. Well, you were talking about. I always say, I need to fucking God. I have to like work on my verbal tics. It's like I keep trying to stop saying, that's amazing. Oh wow, you know, it's like yeah. it's so funny. Like our kid just started saying, like his first word was wow, and like, he just runs around saying wow all day. And like we never taught him that. Like he just heard that because we just say it all the time. Like wow. Anyway, so you know, you're talking about the inaccessibility issue. You've gotten a lot of I don't know, press or whatever. Or you've made a point to call out the city on accessibility shit. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that a little bit? About sort of like, because I mean, to somebody like me, like even those issues are often like totally not on my mind. You know, so I guess. Can you speak on, like, ableism in the city?
Yeah, it's a weird thing that I'm, like, still kind of teaching myself and, like, unraveling myself. And I went through a pretty, like, depressing year last year feeling like, you know, like, intersectionality is, like, a hot topic right now. And, you know, police brutality is a hot topic and like all these things, and like you're seeing people like really advocate for each other, and like I just kept like going to these actions and shit and like just feeling like, you know, like this disabled community was like completely left out. You know, it's like I don't know, I can't even count the amount of marches that I've gone on that just go right over medians. Like, no thought. And everybody knows me by name. You know, I'm not like, and it's just like, cool, we're marching there. You know, like.
Like, I'm thinking of J20 and I'm shaking my head as you're saying this.
You know, and like, I was at a like Black Lives Matter march. I had like been asked to rap on the Capitol and go on this little tiny march with only like 20 of us, and they like march up a flight of stairs. And I'm like, it was just like such a like symbolic moment in my like activism, where I'm like at the bottom of the stairs with like Black Lives Matter shirt, the back says protect trans lives, and I'm just like down here,
oh, no.
Like fuck, you know. And they finally like came back and then like got on the bullhorn, and it was like everybody's talking about every marginalized group, and I'm just like right here. I'm like, yo, just say it, just fucking say it. Like, or even Bernie Sanders, you know, who I was like a big supporter of. Like, we almost played his rally here and they passed on us because I was like too pot friendly. And I was like, yo, this is good, because the disabled community was like, yo, talk about us. Like, you're talking about every marginalized group, talk about us. And I was like, cool, this is my way to tell the disabled community, like, yo, he cares about us. And then, like, we didn't get booked because I care too much, or because, like, my old raps talk about legalizing weed. He gets up there and he starts talking about weed immediately. And then same shit, like, natives, Muslims, blacks, you know what I mean? Like, he goes through this list of and marginalized people, and there's a huge ADA section behind him that, like...
ADA?
Yeah.
What's that
American Disability Act. And, you know, he didn't say shit about us, and it's just like, fuck. And then, you know, so, like... My problem is, like, I'm not trying to play oppression Olympics either, you know what I mean? And I don't want to, like, pit my oppression against other people's oppression. And then I'm like, so why is, like, I'm just trying to, like, unravel all the shit, like... And then I realize, like, I'm not doing shit for the disabled community or with the disabled community, you know? Like, I remember, like, going to my homegirl lady speech, like, all fucked up and, like... Who's the Rosa Parks of my people? You know, like, I know about Rosa Parks. I know about the gay rights movement. I know about the women's suffrage. Like, I know about civil rights. Like, I know a lot of history and care, like, immensely about a lot of shit, and I've never really cared to, like, dig into that. And maybe it's because I deal with it every day, and that's, like, my way of surviving or existing or whatever it is. Like, I spend, like, a lot of time blaming myself and blaming everybody around me, more so blaming myself, you know? Like, I can't be mad at everybody for not thinking about shit when I'm not thinking about it. So I've been, like, trying to unpack my own ableism, you know, and I started realizing that, like, I don't have a big community of disabled people that I'm around, and, you know, why? Like, so, and Wheelchair Sports Camp, the band, has, like, brought me a hell of a lot closer to this disabled rights community because of social media, and they're the ones that have, like, put me on blast. That's, like, made me realize things that I haven't, because I've never been surrounded by that group of activists ever. So, all that to say, I started thinking about it a lot more, and I started, like, trying to use my leverage a little bit more. And it's cool that I have leverage now, you know, because I feel like if I was talking about some of this shit a few years ago, like, it wouldn't make as big of an impact. So one of the big things this last year just got settled this week. In fact, I have to sign the settlement. Yeah, I've been going to Red Rocks since 2009. My first show was... the first show that I chose was, no doubt, Tragic Kingdom. I think 97, 98. And there's only two seating spaces, ADA sections, because the way it's built out of a mountain, it's like front row and last row. And so I've always been accommodated. It's hard to buy front row tickets because everybody buys them up, or they cost more than general admission, or I wait too long, or whatever the case. Like, pretty rare that I have a front row ticket, but every time I show up, as long as that front row isn't totally taken up by wheelchairs, which I've never seen in the tens of hundreds of thousands of concerts I've been to, I would be accommodated, and I'd be allowed to sit there with one friend, which is bullshit, because I have to choose, and I get separated from my crew. But it's the only place I could sit, and it was usually, like, on the side of the speaker, like, not the best acoustic spot, but at least I was accommodated. And I went to this show, Flying Lotus. I went to go see Flying Lotus, and he played after Nas and Schoolboy Q, when Schoolboy Q almost got assassinated. And Flylo comes on, and the whole front row is empty. Literally empty. And there was, like, this new shift. Like, my manager friend, Carlton, wasn't there anymore. The dude who always accommodated me. The shuttle bus that takes wheelchairs to the top of the ramp is, like, flexing on me. Like, you don't have a front row ticket. I go to the box office and try to get a front row ticket, but they're like, yo, the show's, like, half empty. Just show up, you'll be fine. I'm like, cool, that's what I do anyway. And I show up, and they're like, yo, you gotta sit in the back. Like, you don't have a front seat. And I was like, excuse me? Like, I'm not fucking going anywhere. Are you kidding me? I'm like, not unless this is full, and there's nobody here. Like, not even just able-bodied people, there was nobody. And they wanted me to sit in the back behind 5,000 empty seats by myself. And I just, like, flipped all my shit, you know? And I was like, it was, like, personal to me too, because, like, I grew up in this place. Like, these people also know me by name. They've watched me grow up, you know? Like, I'm a very regular concert attender. And so, I was like, let me talk to your boss. let me talk to your boss. Let me talk to your boss. And it was like, they just went under this new, like, security bullshit. Everybody taking their job too seriously. And, like, people were being threatened their jobs. They fired my dude Carlton because he was accommodating people. So I filed my own, like, civil rights claim. And it didn't do shit. They fought me and I didn't, like, have the energy or money for a lawyer or whatever. So it just kind of got fizzled, and then a team of lawyers hit me up and were like, yo, we're going to take on Red Rocks. And, like, I had done articles about, like, I talked to the press about it. Brie Davies did a story about it. And I did what I could a little bit. You know, I kind of, like, dropped the ball, but I definitely, like, started a fire. And so this group of attorneys took on 20 of us plaintiffs and sued the city, because that's a city-owned and operated venue. And got some better ticketing policies. Cool. And that's cool. Like, that just settled now. And then, you know, like, going back to last year, a year and a half ago, I'm, like, being so fucked up. Like, I've been trying to get involved with this group ADAPT for a while. Like, on the cover of our album, I'm even wearing an ADAPT hoodie. And it has nothing to do. I didn't buy it from the organization, but I bought it because it reminded me. And I've actually been, I got sent some hate mail from ADAPT in Texas because I played an Inaccessible South by Southwest show and didn't pull out of it. And for some reason, like, I just wanted to do a benefit show, or, like, how do I get involved? And, like, I never got any response. And then I saw this shit going on with the Trump Care. And all these, like, disabled people getting, like, dragged out all savage in front of Mitch McConnell's office and shit. And
what, like, was the thing, just so that we know exactly what we're talking about, I remember this very specifically, but what was it exactly that was going on with Trump Care that people were doing this about?
Yeah, well, you know, they're basically going to squeeze a lot of the public funding or the public assistance, and specifically Medicaid was going to be stripped $800 million within 10 years. And for chronically disabled people, Medicaid is the only provider that'll cover long-term home services. So for people that need an assistant to get dressed or eat or whatever, like, no matter, even if they have insurance, they have to buy into Medicaid because that's the only place you can get long-term community service. So, you know, I obviously depend on health insurance. I've always been pretty well covered because my dad's a union iron worker. My mom was, like, a blue collar everything. And so I had double insurance. Plus, my mom was usually under the poverty line. So I'd have both insurances plus Medicare, Medi-Cal, Medicaid, whatever. And I have tons of debt. Like, none of my shit is ever fully covered. My wheelchairs, I mean, some of my surgeries have costed upwards of millions of dollars.
So to this day, you still have...
Oh, yeah. I've never opened. I've never tried to take care of any of it. Because that's, like, exhausting. Fuck. Yeah, fuck. So, like, even though I don't... even though I don't rely on these, like, attendants, like, I can't...
I'm sorry. I've never even opened...
It's okay.
Great.
I would spend, like, it would be like a part-time job, right, fighting.
Just reading it.
You just read, yeah, fuck it. So, of course, it, like, affects me. And, like, you know, this whole Trump shit affects me. And, like, you know, when you're looking at the poverty rates, the unemployment rates, the police brutality rates, like, disabled people, most especially disabled people of color, are fucking highest on all of these lists. You know, and we're just like, so fucking left out. We're also, like, the biggest group of minorities. Like, 1 in 10 people have a disability of some sort, you know? So, obviously, it's, like, affecting me, and I'm, like, fucking bad. And, I see something on something about ADAPT and an action, and I'm, like, call or email, and she writes back, like, immediately and is like, what are you doing tomorrow? I was like, I don't know, what's up? And she's like, well, there's going to be a group of us inside Corey Gardner's office and a group of us outside. Can you get arrested? And I was like, yeah, I'm there. And so we did this 90-hour sit-in in our senator's office, and come to find out, like, Denver is, like, one of the most radical disabled rights cities in the country. And, like, it's just so ironic. We're, like, rewind a year ago, and I'm, like, so fucked up about all this shit. And it's, like, it's right here. This all happened right here. Like, Colfax and Broadway is where, like, the Gang of 19 laid in front of the RTD buses and demanded that they provide a, like, lift. And that's why all but public transportation. Like, come to find out, ADAPT started here, was the first group of people that broke, like, a small group, this dude from a nursing home, or, like, a home, basically broke out some people against doctors' wills and orders and this, and sued the state to pay for those services that they needed to live independently. They called this, like, Independent Living Center Atlantis, and that became ADAPT, and that became Medicaid.
Wow.
You know, like, that first fight to get these, this small, because before 1974-5, any severely disabled person that needed these long-term services were just institutionalized. You know, and so it's just like, it's right here in Denver that these same group of protesters that I'm sitting in with, like, smashed the corners so that we have ramps and curb cuts.
Is that what they did?
Yeah, with sledgehammers. It's That's just beautiful. Like, what a world, you know? And, like, going back to all these actions where, like, I could have been arrested plenty of times. But, and, like, the most recent one before this ADAPT thing was at Standing Rock. And, like, a lot of my friends that I went with were like, yeah, let's get arrested. And I was like, but, like, don't you think they need help in the kitchen? Or, like, we got this car. Like, maybe we could, like, you know, I'm, like, trying to be effective about, like, providing to this movement, not just, like,
getting arrested.
Badge of honor, yeah, you know what I mean? And this was the first time where I was like, yes. And it worked. Like, it was a very effective action, you know? Very, very effective. And so,
My favorite quote from when I was reading about it was, like, I don't even remember what the context, but it was like, somebody better give us access to the bathroom, or this sit-in's about to become a shit-in. What was it? What, they didn't even let you in the bathroom or something? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they almost didn't even let us up, because that it was a private building, like a Chase Bank, Starbucks, maybe even Halliburton. I think I saw
some. Oh, yeah, the Halliburton's in there, yeah. Not that I've scoped out that building or anything.
And so it's a private building, and you need a key to get up the elevator. So they only allow so many of us. This same group of ADAPT protesters have been arrested with Corey, for sitting in front of Corey Gardner. I don't know exactly the action. So they knew who we were. Now, I'm new, you know, I'm the new kid on the block, and except one of the ladies that I was with was also on the civil right, or on the Red Rocks lawsuit, so I knew her. And then this other girl that I did know, I had just met her at my friend's funeral, and this is a mutual friend that has my disability, who is a very big, like, disabled advocate. I was, like, going through this, like, spiritual shit, too, about, like, losing another friend, you know, that was a disabled advocate, and so, like, it's just, like, crazy the way, like, everything manifested to, like, this moment and, like, that time, and, like, my Twitter was, like, trending for a period of time, and, like, we were doing just, like, interviews left and right, and it was cool because I was also bringing this, like, different, like, audience, you know what I mean? Like, I was also in this office of all white women, you know, so, like, and I'm wearing my Black Lives Matter shirt, like, yo, let's not forget, it's a lot worse, you know? So, it was really cool, and, like, I just feel like everything kind of, like, led to this, like, I've been waiting for this, you know, forever. It was, like, one of those really, like, effective direct actions that, you know, we get off on. So, yeah, we weren't even allowed to, like, go up the elevator without their permission, and we almost, like, didn't even get up there because, like, Don Russell was, like, we almost didn't get up. I'm like, girl, let's just get up there, and then we could, like, start talking shit, you know? Like, but we gotta get up there. We got up there, and they were like, nope, can't use the bathrooms. The only bathroom is the public bathroom at Starbucks. But it's like, if we went downstairs to use the bathroom at Starbucks, we're not getting back up that elevator. So we pissed. We made it, like, and that was another cool thing.
You just shit right up there?
We Pasco, which is an independent living company that provides people with their own attendance. Like, you can choose your own, or they provide them for you. One of the dudes that works for them is the son of the guy that started Atlantis, that first group that broke out of the nursing home. So they were there bringing supplies up and down for, like, disabled people that needed attending. So they came up just ready. They're like, what do you need? They built, like, a curtain for privacy. I was like, no, I'm Instagramming this. I'm Snapchatting this. I don't need a curtain. Like, that was the biggest victory for me, was pissing in the senator's office. And then she brought up, like, a makeshift shitter. And then they gave us the key. The first night, like, after everybody left and it was just us and security, they opened the door for us because it was going to get shitty for sure.
That's amazing. Yeah, but, you know, the credible threat of it becoming a shit-in was enough for them to realize, okay, we don't want to deal with this.
It's cool. It was so cool. And, like, we were there for 90 hours. And it's just crazy, like, how effective just, like, a small group of people can be, you know? It was really awesome. It was, like, really humbling to be a part of that and, like, learn my history in such a, like, authentic way, like, next to people that, like, either were there or, like, knew of people that were there, you know? So.
That's crazy. Yeah, like, hearing this lineage, you know, starting of, like, you know, like, tracing your political evolution is fucking fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, I remember you being at Occupy. And we've probably gone through similar but very different introspective moments of, like, analyzing. And, but it's crazy. It's crazy to me to think of, like, you know, like, you being like, oh, you know, my problems are nothing or whatever. Like, just, like not wanting to look at, like, yourself as someone who should be advocating for you. And then, like, seeing the way it's, like, sent you on this journey is,
Yeah, and it's really, like the music that's, like, kind of really forced me into that shit. I mean, obviously, I came up with a band name that's, like, poking fun and, like, sarcastic about Wheelchair Sports Camp or whatever. But, like, even though there is a real Wheelchair Sports Camp that I've been at since I was, like, 10. But anyway, like, I don't know. It's just, it's wild. Everything's wild. It's like, I didn't have to start thinking about these things because I've lived a very, like, privileged disabled life. You know, I'm small enough, I'm crazy enough, and I've got hella gangs of people around me all the time that I've been able to navigate through this really accessible, like, dangerous, inaccessible, dangerous world, you know? Like, I've been to Haiti, for Christ's sake, for 5 weeks. Like, that is the most inaccessible place maybe ever, besides Palestine is the only other place I could think of. You know, it's like, I've been able to do all this shit, and so, like, but that was a privilege, you know what I mean? Like, I paid part of the rent at UNAE, DIY spot, it's up a flight of stairs. Because I could, you know, because I could get carried easily. And I didn't surround myself by a lot of people who couldn't. You know, like, I knew about them, and I knew that it was a thing, but, like, so it's, like, really cool how, like, everything's kind of, like, pulled me together, like, because, you know, music was obviously, like, my first, like, rap music was my first, like, identity. You know, I found rap music when I was 5, like, before I knew I was a woman, before I knew I was a queer, before I could conceptualize what being disabled is, you know, besides. So that's what brought me into all this shit. And for, like, a while, like, I didn't want to get boxed into, like, I had an activist friend of mine, a really good friend of mine, Leroy Moore, who has a kind of collective of people called Crip Hop. And he reached out to me on the MySpace days, like, when I recorded my first demo in my bedroom. And immediately was like, I gotta get you involved. And I didn't hit him up for, like, months, because I was like, I'm not just a crippled rapper.
Right.
You know, like, I'm a good rapper. Like, I'm not just a woman rapper. You know, and, like, there is something to say about that, but, like, also I was like, you are fucking crippled. You know what I mean? Like, you're poking fun at your, like, disability a lot in your lyrics. Like, don't fucking, like, ostracize this group of people. Like, what the fuck? And, like, you know, it didn't take me too long, maybe like a half a year, to be like, yo, Kaylin, you're fucking up. Like, now we're, you know, really good friends, and he's put me on to a lot of disabled artists from all across the world doing rap.
That's crazy.
So, yeah, it's been a long, long evolution, a long journey, and Wheelchair Sports Camp has carried me the whole way.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to think, you know, I know you know this, but it's like, so often, you know, when I've been engaged in struggle, we're like, oh, it's easy to, like, write off how important culture and art and music is in shaping the public imagination, and it's really cool to hear how music has been such a powerful vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
For you. So you, on top of all this shit, I totally forgot about the Haiti thing, but you also work at Youth on Record.
Yeah.
Can you talk about what that is and what you do there? I interviewed the Flowbots a while ago, but we didn't really even talk about Youth on Record very much. So if you could talk about Youth on Record and what you do there, and anything you've learned through that process that was...
Yeah, I teach, it's now across the street, I live across the street, which is so dope. We're a nonprofit organization that serves underserved youth in the city, and we're a social justice organization, but we do creative education, so we have classes in music production, which I teach, and MC school and spoken word and social solutions and problems and music fundamentals. And all of our classes are led by partner artists. So I got involved because I was an artist, not because I was a teacher, educator, or anything. So when I got involved, it was still flowbots.org.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard, like, through some friends that were kind of, like, involved in this organization, and Jamie from the Flowbots ended up, we played a benefit show, Iraq Veterans Against War, I think. And he was like, I've been a big fan for a long time. And I was like, well, cool. I want to talk to you about how you, you know, turned this single into, like, a community organization. And, like, I was just so fascinated, you know, by, like, that intersection of, like, using music to, like, you know, help. So I slowly got involved, and they asked me to, like, book and host some events, and I just kept bugging, like, when can I take my beat machine to the class? Like, when you gonna let me in? And then I went with Nate, who started the first Youth on Record class, which is the music production side, and went to a treatment center where the students are forced, court-ordered to live. It's like kind of a step in or out of jail. Majority are there for neglect and trauma. Like, you know, shuffling of foster care, and the school was on lockdown because there was some kind of conflict. And he's like, you want a job? I hadn't even gone. He's like, we need you to teach this. And, like, they didn't even know that I had a degree in music production or nothing. So it was also like, wow, cool. And so I've been teaching with them for 5+ years, and it's crazy. Like, I wouldn't call it a job. I mean, like, I would do it for free. And it's cool because it's like a job where I get to tour, and then I get to come back and talk to my students about it, and, like, I have, like, real life experiences. And I think, like, going through college and, like, teaching art is weird anyway, because it's like you usually have to make this, like, decision, like, am I going to be an educator or am I going to, like, be an artist? You know, like, you can't do both. And this is, like, a place where I'm encouraged to do my art first, which makes me a better teacher. I mean, if any, I'm not even, like, teaching, I'm learning, you know. It's, like, it's a collaborative effort. Hopefully just giving them, you know, tools to figure shit out themselves and teach me things, you know. So it's been really dope, and now we have a recording studio, and we have, like, open programming so kids can drop in and record. It's cool because it's kept me, I think, like, one of my biggest fears as a rapper has always been, like, you know, when we came up, like, our parents were like, I hate that shit, don't listen to that shit. Or, like, music was better when I was a kid.
Right.
And it's like, that's such an elitist, like, false thing. You know, and I never wanted to be that. And then, you know, here I am in my 20s. Like, I only listen to conscious hip-hop. Or, like, it's never going to be as good as it was in the 90s. You know, and that's fucking bullshit. You know,
I don't know. I've been going back to that. Maybe it's because I'm getting a little old.
I do, but maybe because you're not hanging out with all these, like, kids that I'm hanging out with that are coming in that studio every week, and just, like, I'm just, like, blown away. I'm like, they've kept me better. They've kept me more relevant. They've kept me from being an elitist. You know what I mean? Like, I'm much more connected to this younger generation of art makers and community leaders, that it's easy when you get, like, 30, 40 to just, it's not even forget about them, but, like, you're not seeing them every day, so it's, like, hard to know what's up, you know. And, like, that's been the coolest part about Youth on Record, is I'm, like, getting paid to hang out with, like, teenagers and, like, keeping me on my shit, you know, and I'm trying to keep them on their shit, and it's just, like, this cool collaborative thing. So that's Youth on Record. I, till the day I die, like, be repping them, you know. It's cool too, the Flowbots took us on our first, like, big national tour, so that was a really nice thing of a hometown band to take some, like, nobodies at the time, you know.
They're awesome. They're such good people.
They're good people.
And awesome artists. Their new album's fucking really dope. It's by far their best shit.
Yeah. So.
Well, we'll probably definitely had an hour at this point. Yeah. So I guess, I mean, do you have musical or artistic influences that, you know, as a disabled, quote unquote, disabled person that, like, you know, that you saw and you're like, fuck, I can do this? Or did you just get the idea on your own? Like, what are your influences?
Yeah, I'm starting to realize, like, more and more that, like, I didn't have, I was always like, I don't want to be the person. I don't want to be the first, like, crippled spokesperson, whatever. And I'm not. I'm definitely not. We're in 2017, and there's how many billion people on the planet, you know? But I didn't want to be the one to, like, speak for everybody or whatever. And I'm starting to tour more and starting to see more disabled people come. Like in the Northwest, not this last tour, because that was Mexico, the one before that. We had never been to this region, and like hella disabled people came out. Like 10 wheelchairs, you know, that's crazy. Like I've been to Red Rock shows, it's not 10 wheelchairs. And, you know, people were like, yo, I've never had anything I could relate to like this. And I was like, whoa, you know, like, I've never had that. You know, like, Frida Kahlo, you know, like, but I didn't really get hip to, like, her till I was older, you know. And
she was disabled?
Oh, big time. Yeah. Disabled, queer. She was disabled. She had only one leg when she passed away. But that's the cool thing about, like, why speaking up for myself and, like, getting, like, checking my privileges as a disabled person is so important, because, like, there is not a lot of us. Like, there's not media representation. There's not, I mean, it's a very exploitative thing. 20% of all little people live in LA, because it's like that's where the jobs are, and that's where the healthcare is, and that's where the networks are, you know. And like majority of the time, like, they're being cast in some fucking minstrel show shit that's like,
Jesus,
you know, that is not being seen in the minstrel show. You know, like, nobody's seeing it, nobody's calling it out like they would a minstrel show. But like, you'll take a picture with the elf with your kid on holidays, you know. Like, so I didn't have anybody disabled that I really looked up to, but I did, but I didn't know their disabilities, and they weren't in chairs. Like, you know, my first love was TLC. T-Boss has sickle cell anemia. You know, there's like more hidden disability or invisible disabilities, I guess. That's probably not the most correct term. But disabled wise, I didn't come up with them. But again, this wheelchair sports camp crew has been like bringing me closer, and I've like been put on to a lot doper artists that are disabled. Like super inspired by this Jillian Mercado model. She let us use her image for the cover of a mixtape we did a few years ago. There are quite a lot of people with my disability that are performers and artists. There's a really famous French pianist with my disability, a lot of actors. So I'm still like being put onto them. I think, like, as a rapper, I'm like super inspired by a lot of the youth right now, and I've also been in a place where lyrically it's easier for me to listen to bad rap or, like, stuff like mumble rap even, you know, because I'm not, like, fixated on what's being said. I can, like, play it in the background and be productive. And, you know, like, music outside of hip-hop, too, which I didn't even think that I would ever care about music outside of hip-hop until I got into college and, like, probably heard Radiohead or something, you know, and it's like, now I'm listening to, like, everything, and I'm inspired by, like, not even just music, you know, like, I'm really into, like, visual arts and graffiti, and I'm super inspired by Denver. Like, I've always had this, like, pride in the city and felt like this is, like, a magic place, and but I was, like, on the outside of it as a teenager, you know. It's like I only knew what was on the radio. I only knew what was being fed to me. And, like, the more I got involved and the more I started going to these actions, I'm like, yo, there's some amazing, like, art being made right here. And, like, as far as activism, like, the history of our movements, you know, like, the Chicano movement was here, like, disabled rights here, like, we're a very special city that I don't think is super locked into, like, a defining sound or defining anything, because we're landlocked and we got these, like, crazy energy from the mountains, and, like, we're influenced by all these, like, big cities, but we're not locked into them because, you know, the, like, closest next big city is, like, Salt Lake City or Albuquerque. I'm inspired by Albuquerque like crazy.
New Mexico is so great.
There's a really great, like, noise scene, like, radical feminist queer noise, awesome bad bitches out there. Then, like, we're kind of like a sister city, you know. I'm inspired by, like, Tit Wrench and, like, that community they've created and cultivated, and inspired by the shit going on in Mexico. Like, I'm inspired by a lot. Disabled wise, I'm still a baby, you know. Like, I'm still learning a lot. And
are you like trying to research that history more now? Are you, like, reading books and shit?
I am. I'm starting to, but it's like, it's a hard thing. It is a really hard thing, because it's, like, stuff, like, that I feel like I already know, because it's just, like, in my bones, you know? And then to, like, read about it and, like, hear about it, it's, like, it's heavy. It's heavy. I have to be, like, in the right space. I just picked up a book. I'm, like, for the first time in my life in the nonfiction, or into fiction, sci-fi. Like, usually I would only read nonfiction and be like, if I'm not learning anything, like, what's the point of reading?
What sci-fi are you reading right now?
Octavia Butler.
Fuck yeah, what are you reading?
I'm just about to finish the Imago. Like, it's the third of, is it the Exogenesis? I don't know. It's like the last series that I've read all of her series now.
Parable fucking killed me.
Yeah, that's what got me, like, hooked.
So her other books are as good as that?
Oh, everyone. Oh, yeah, she's the best.
What's the Exogenesis series?
It's still pretty, like, post-apocalyptic. It's more, like, alien. It feels more sci-fi, but it, like, has a lot of, like, reality in it. And, like, basically, you know, the humans destroy ourselves, inevitably so, and, like, this other creature, like, comes and, like, takes the good parts and mixes.
Don't spoil it.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's three books. I couldn't spoil it if I tried, but I'm on the last one. So, like, this is the first time where, like, I need self-care and, like, spirituality. Like, Standing Rock really, like, fucking nailed that into me. Like, that shit matters more to me now than ever. Like, grounding myself and, like, knowing, like, how much I can, absorb, because, you know, we all have, like, fights, and, like, if you don't take care of yourself, like, you're gonna burn out, you know, and I've been burnt out, and I don't want to do that, so.
I love that you're nerding out on sci-fi.
First time ever.
Like, oh, God. Well, the funny thing, I mean, I always say this, but it's like, the thing about sci-fi is that it's... we're kind of living in it now. So a lot of the science fiction stuff isn't... it's not as, like, fictional as we want it to be.
Right. Well, yeah, I know. Like, Octavian wrote that Parable of the Sword, like, the 70s and 80s. And it says, make America great again. Like, it's fucking crazy. But I read this, like, quote that, like... this is how I found out about her. Is a bunch of activists, like... created sci-fi short stories in her name. So, like, maybe
Octavia's Brood.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like that book.
It's... yeah. It. I mean, like, it's not an Octavia Butler book. But the idea that, like... if we are... like, the writer was, like, on Amy Goodman and said this, and this, like, changed my whole fucking world. She was like... if we're trying to, like, fight as activists, we are trying to fight for, like, equality and utopia, or, you know, like, no war. That in itself is fiction. That's sci-fi. Like, your fantasy of that, that's a fantasy. Like, how do you create that? Like, you have to fucking think on a sci-fi level, you know, in order to, like, reach these goals that aren't reality right now and haven't been reality for a really fucking long time since we've ever known, you know. So that's
beautiful. Yeah, I the stuff I read about that book I really liked, and then just some of it just didn't feel... it wasn't science fiction enough for me.
Yeah, I got through some of the stories, but it really put me on to Octavia, and she really, like, touches on some real shit in these sci-... and she's, you know, a woman of color, like, doing sci-fi. That in itself is, like, not a common thing, you know, so it was cool.
I think I read those Parable books in, like, a week. Like, I just couldn't put it down. I was just like... and I don't know, Yasmin was pregnant right when I was reading it, and I just, like... really shaped my imagination. It probably not in good ways.
Yeah, you should check out Wild Seed.
What is it?
Wild Seed.
Wild Seed? Is that is that the first book of Exogenesis?
No, this is the first book of a different series. But it starts with Wild Seed. It's cool. It's a little... it's less related to, like, now. Like, it's still... there's still things that you're like, oh, shit, you know? But it's a little easier to, like, escape. Because, like, escaping is important, you know? And that's, like, the beauty of art and, like, music. And, like, I've always tried to, like... I've never wanted to be this, like, rapper that's, like, spitting nonfiction the whole time. Because, like, what I listen to at home... it's, like, the shit that allows me to, like, get out of my head. You know what I mean? So, like, there's always, like, been a balance in my art between, like, escapism and, like, realism, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's, like, a really hard balance when you start talking about real shit. You know, it's, like, how do you be metaphorical? How do you be sci-fi about something that's so, like, in your face and, like... you know, especially as rappers, we have so many words to fill. Like, it, you know, you could say something with a melody and repeat it 8 times and it'd be the most, like, prophetic song ever.
Right.
And if you say that same catchphrase as a rapper 8 times, you sound like an idiot.
I know.
You know? And, like, then a beautiful singer says it, and I'm like, oh my God, you touched my heart. And then a rapper says it, and I'm like, yo, that was corny as fuck, you know? So, like, that's a hard balance that I'm always trying to find.
I gave up on trying to find the balance. I just ran.
You're a dad now. You're 40.
Yeah, it's
so
fine.
I guess I still got 10 years to give up.
shit. Well, I don't know. I guess the only thing left to ask you is if people want to go buy your music, if people want to listen to your music, if people want to follow you on Twitter,
mm-hmm.
where is the...
Speaking of buying my shit, I'll show you on this live podcast, but if you want to buy it, we got these cool pop-up CDs.
Oh, nice.
That are for Closed Denver House.
Oh, shit.
And you'll find anything on wheelchairsportscamp.co.
Holy shit. Always wanted to make a pop-up. Fucking did it.
So, we got physical shit, we got streaming shit.
Nice.
Wheelchair Sports Camp, anything.
You're on Sage Francis's label, Strange Famous.
Strange Famous. Yeah, you can find our stuff on strangefamousrecords.com. You can find our stuff at wheelchairsportscamp.co. You could stream our stuff on Spotify and Apple and SoundCloud and Bandcamp, and you could
YouTube.
You could listen to my rants about farts and poop and tampons on Twitter at WC Sports Camp, or all over the world wide web. It's pretty easy to find.
Cool. Well, yeah, I'm holding this. This is an art object. This is beautiful. Well, I learned a lot in this interview, and thanks for all the work you do, and thanks for taking the time to have me into your house.
Yeah, thanks for coming over.
Shit. And I can't wait to geek out with you more on science fiction.
Yeah. No matter where I go, all eyes on me. Everyone, stop what you're doing. The human's moving. Ooh, when I breathe, one of many thousands. Yeah, that's who I be. Now I need the whole room to freeze. They're God blessing me, but I didn't even sneeze. On their knees, questioning excessively. Wanna know my life expectancy? Like it doesn't get to me. Get a hysterectomy, your life worth living. Don't watch TV. Sounds like a gimmick. Little people living in a big world, successful married couple that have kids, girl. Let me guess, they eat dinner too. My breath ain't nothing but an interview. It's not what I did or what I didn't do. I learned to exploit all this shit when I was introduced to the game. Born into lame medical debt, the brain and body weren't identical yet. We made a hell of a bet, a hypothetical mess. Now I gives no fucks and it's incredible. Yes, I'm still tangled up in a mic cable and not able to eat at high tables or live life stable. Up at all your right labels, but didn't get catcalled and ain't complaining at all. They're like, Kaylin, you talk too much. Shut up, you walk too much. Or is sex still the same? I'm like, nah, boo, hush. Give me some confidence, now I got too much. The inspirational porn star. Oh, my cute wheelchair costs as much as a sports car. Look, we got enough problems, no need for you to call a cop who can't solve one. Tis the season, get a job, taking pics with Santa in the middle of the mall. Unless you're good at bagging groceries or pushing carts through the snow freeze. Good thing for Goodwill, oh please. Every time I go to a show, can't see shit, but I park front row. But I don't ask for no pity, so why you rapping so shitty?
There's a stairway to heaven.
Oh, shit. So tell me how the hell we gonna get in?
Well, I don't
know. Lord knows where I'm at, and it's hard out here for a gimp. There's a stairway to heaven. So tell me how the hell we gonna get in? Lord knows where I'm at, and it's hard out here for a gimp. There's a stairway to heaven. So tell me, how the hell we gonna get in? Lord knows where I'm headed. It's hard out here for a gimp. There's a stairway to heaven. Knock, knock. So tell me, how the hell we gonna get in? Lord knows where I'm headed. It's hard out here for a gimp. It's hard out here for a gimp. Hard out here for a gimp.
I'm
pissed. I just sound really neutral.
Who do you like more, Chief White or Lieutenant or Mayor Hancock?
Two or Mayor Hancock?
Chief White.
Oh, neither. I fucking hate that.